You, hello, Robin. Hello, Rod. Everybody good?
Everybody is very good. Robin, I think we're good, right, so far?
I think we're good.
All right, cool. How is the American nation's capital treating you there, Pierre? How's it going in Washington?
I don't know. I got in very, very late or early this morning, depending how you look at it, from New York, and I spent most of the day either at the gym or in my room prepping for the game, so I don't know how it is. It's cold outside.
Okay, that's because here in Montreal, and I spoke to my brother earlier who lives out in Oakville in Toronto. Outside of Toronto, it's just, you know, we're sitting in the minus 30 range, and I would imagine that seems to be par for the course right across everywhere. So
yeah.
Okay, Pierre, a couple of things from yesterday's 3-1 loss. First, you know, I guess it's so easy, Pierre. I watched that game. And I didn't mind the middle 20. I didn't mind the last 20. But Pierre, that first 20, like, it can't just be that we're going to, you know, they're coming off a break and they were traveling. I just, to me, that's an excuse, and it's almost unacceptable. And so can we be overly critical about their first 20, especially the first 10, but the entire first 20?
Good teams don't have a problem motivating themselves. They get up and play. I saw the Rangers last night against Washington. I know they didn't have to travel, but their first 20 minutes, they were very good. Washington was not very good. Now, Washington in the second period was excellent. The Rangers not as much, but in the third, the Rangers were back on it again. New Jersey didn't have a hard time against Detroit early on in their game. They were very good. You go around the league, Nashville didn't have a hard time, and they were traveling. They were real good in St. Louis. You go around the league, you can look at teams that are pretty good that didn't have a hard time. Today, chance to watch a lot of that Montreal game on tape. I didn't think that was a hard team to play against. I didn't think that was a team that was ready to play. I didn't think that was a team whose best players wanted to be their best players. That's just the impression I had from watching what I watched today.
Yeah, well I kind of got that. I thought Galchenyuk was a... I thought he played well yesterday, and we'll get into that. But is okay, so the start out of the gate, if I'm watching this game from my home, so who do I put this on? Is it the coach? But I can't say it's the coach, Pierre, because I'm not in the locker room, and I don't know what he does minutes before puck drop. But I do know that there's a room full of professional players, and is it the void of not having Shea Weber there, or is it somebody not getting up? Can I put this on the captain to you know, circle the wagons and all that stuff? Where can I lay the blame for that dreadful 15?
Well, you know what's interesting? You talk about it. Shea Weber's a tremendous leader. Shea Weber's a tremendous person. Shea Weber's been a very, very good player in this league for a very long time. But they had Shea Weber for good portions of this season, too. And they've had a lot of bad starts. So, you know, I think it's more the type of player, per se, around the dressing room rather than just one or two guys. The best teams in the league, and I mean the very best teams in the league, police themselves. The Chicago Blackhawks don't need Joel Quenneville. Back when they were winning cups, they didn't need Joel Quenneville come in and kick water buckets around the dressing room to get them motivated. Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and Patrick Kane, those were the guys that got that room ready to play. Our good teams in Pittsburgh, Mario Lemieux, Ulf Samuelsson, Joey Mullen, Larry Murphy, Kevin Stevens, Ronnie Francis, they challenged each other. That's how it was. And guys didn't have a problem with that. Guys responded to that. If you want to be on a good team, you don't have problems being around guys that have strong personalities.
Well, okay, so because I'm not a... head coach in the National Hockey League, Pierre, but I do watch enough hockey, and I like to play the role of the head coach, and I know that if I was a head coach, there's a certain tempo and pace that I would like to play with, and I don't think that Claude Julien and I are on the same page, and I'm not taking anything away from the coach, it's just different types of philosophy when it comes to a brand of hockey that we want to play. But I just find that if you're going to play that defensive type of hockey and that counter type of hockey, that's the kind of start that we should be expecting, I guess, right? Because if you're a team like that we're going to watch tonight, the Tampa Bay Lightning, that they don't care who their opponent is when they hit the ice, they're going to try to take the game to their opponents. And this is why I find maybe there are these lackluster starts, because you're already a little bit kind of gearing your team into a defend mode first.
Oh, yeah, you're in passive resistance mode. There's no question. I think that's a very feasible point. And a relevant point, but that's where, again, the players have to take charge and guys have to be pushing one another. You know, who's going to get in the room? These are kind of the things you hear. Chris Nyland could tell you this. Who's going to get the first hit? Who's going to get the first goal? Who's going to stir it up the most? You know, guys challenge one another. It's not yelling and screaming, but you hear those kinds of things all the time. You know, who's got the first big hit? And things like that. Who's got the first big shot block? You know, Pricer, you got the ball. Well, things like that. It's just little buzz things that go around your room that get everybody's attention. If you have a real quiet room, more times than not, it's not really a team that's going to be super aggressive.
Well, and as you alluded to Weber, it's definitely more systemic than about one player, Pierre. I mean, they've got a -9 goal differential in the first period. It's one of the worst in hockey. And one of the other big symptoms, Pierre, is it just seems like any kind of deficit is insurmountable for this team, and it's like they know it. They play the good second period, they don't get the goal, and it's just a matter of time before the opponent, in this case Carolina, kind of gets the next one and then takes control.
Rod, how long have you and I and Mitch Melnick and Mitch Gallo been talking about that? Yeah. We've been talking about that since the start of the year. There's a reality factor. Guys are aware of the other players in the league. Guys are aware of the talent base with which they play. Guys are aware there's limitations in terms of their depth down the middle where a lot of the offense in this league comes from. I would defy you to look at the top teams in the league and say, boy, oh boy, are they bad down the middle. But I would tell you that if you look at the bad teams in this league, you'd be able to say, oh man, they're not very good down the middle. You know, that's where it starts and finishes in this league. It really does. I watched the game last night that I worked, and you can make the argument that Mika Zibanejad, even though it was a 0-0 game and it was a 1-0 shootout win for the Rangers, you can make the point that Mika Zibanejad and Kevin Hayes down the middle were better than Evgeny Kuznetsov and Nick Backstrom. I'm not saying that you couldn't argue back the other way from the Washington point of view, but I'm just telling you, Kevin Hayes did an unbelievable job in a matchup situation against Nick Backstrom. He did. And Zibanejad did an amazing job, or a really good job, against Kuznetsov. So the Rangers won the center ice battle, and they eventually won the game.
One of the things, Pierre, that obviously is plaguing the Habs is the lack of offense. And we were talking a little earlier about, you know, who has become a better forward under Claude Julien, and we were kind of scratching our heads to come up with one. You know, what do you do to get guys to score more? They're all talking about getting their chances, but they're just not getting them in the back of the net. I don't even know what you can tell them at this point.
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to practice, Rob, and I'll give you an example. Look at the Boston Bruins, Danton Heinen. Scored last night. Riley Nash had 2 goals last night. You wouldn't consider them to be offensive, massive point producers. There have been points this season when Jake DeBrusk, who's just a kid, has had tremendous offensive games for the Bruins. And I'm just using them as an example because they're a division rival and they're a team that's won 8 of their last 10. They've won 5 in a row, and they're getting unbelievable supplemental offense. And so what do they do? Well, they encourage their guys to turn it loose and go get it. They say, go out there and score. Go out there and go dominate the puck. Go out there and get bodies and pucks to the net. That's what they do, and it's working for them, and it's working really well for them.
Pierre, after the 3-1 loss yesterday to the Carolina Hurricanes, Claude Julien in his post-game press conference.
Such as Alex Galchenyuk, too. You know, we've got him on the wing. It doesn't mean we'll never see him at center if there's a need for it. So, you know, we're keeping our options open.
So that was the first time in...
There's a need.
Well, that's exactly what we hit off the top of the show. And I'm like, well, you know, 8-9 points out of a playoff spot, other teams holding games in hand, and your offense is completely dismal. Only the Arizona Coyotes are less efficient on the offensive side of the rink. If there's pretty much no time like the present. And look, I said this, Pierre, that I don't believe that Galchenyuk should be at center tonight. I just not you don't get these beasts as your first night at center. That's my philosophy. It's going to be lambs to the slaughter. But at some point here, Pierre, like, what is the concern about moving Galchenyuk to center and maybe drawing it back to wing? Is it that they were wrong for 37 games? Because my perspective is there's nothing wrong with being wrong for 37 games, because you got one guy locked in for 5 years and the other guy locked in for 3 years. I would rather you figure it out in game 38 or 39 than let it run its course this way.
Anytime you run your team based on what you're thinking people's impression of you is, are the fans going to be mad at me because I did this, or is the media going to write this because I did that? If you're running your team that way, then you're going to fail. You're going to fail big. I don't think Claude does that. I really don't. I don't believe Claude runs his team like that. I never saw him do that when he was in Boston. I never saw him do that when he was in New Jersey.
I think what you need to do when you're coaching in the league, and again, I've walked in his shoes, so I kind of know what it's about. You've got to make hard decisions that don't always please everybody. And the most important thing is you got to please the players in your dressing room in terms of how you're doling out the ice time, how you're assigning responsibility, and the roles that you're creating for players. And if you do that, you're going to get this huge buy-in. How many times have you heard players say, I love playing for that guy because, and usually the because is because he's got the room figured out, he's got the bench figured out, and he's got the ice time figured out. That's why they like playing for certain guys.
Would you agree with me that, you know, I like to see Galchenyuk back at center probably on Saturday night? Would you say that tonight is not the ideal matchup to put somebody at center?
No. Tonight's not a good matchup night for that team against Tampa. No, it's not. It's not at all. This is, I thought before the season started, the best team in the league. I'm not changing that. And Rod Francis can back me up on that. That's what I said. And this is not a good night to try to experiment in terms of how you're creating roles. That being said, the games aren't won on paper, and they're not won on talk shows. They're won on the ice. And, you know, the Canadians can go in there and do a little bit better than what they did last night and maybe find a flatline Tampa team who doesn't respect them enough, then maybe they can do something. But I would tell you this, having been around Tampa a good bit over the last few years, one thing I can tell you is John Cooper really respects the Montreal Canadian logo. He really respects the organization, and he respects major portions of that dressing room in terms of the players that are there. And he's told me that to my face. So they know Montreal's always been a big game for them because they use it as a measuring stick. They really do.
If the Canadians decide to go with a shift in philosophy at center, and whether it's Drouin and Galchenyuk, if they make a move there, maybe not tonight, but in the future, that would be something that would involve the general manager, you'd have to think, Pierre, if you're talking about these kinds of players, a decision like that.
I would imagine. But, you know, you and I and Mitch Gallo and Mitch Melnick have talked about that player playing center ever since he got drafted. So I understand why they are hesitant to play him there. I understand that they're worried about the defensive parts of the game and everything else. The Bruins were worried about that stuff, too, with a player that they traded away to San Jose back in 2005, 2006, Joe Thornton. So players can learn how to play defense. They can't always learn how to play offense. This guy knows how to play offense. You can teach him defense.
Also, the big storyline for me tonight is watching Jonathan Drouin play the Lightning for the first time, Sergachev facing off against the Habs for the first time. I know it's going to take years to really assess this trade, but as it stands right now, kind of looks like the Lightning were the winners.
Yeah, I would agree, Robin. But again, I liked what you said at the beginning. It takes time to evaluate all trades, not just one, especially when it's a head-for-head kind of deal that this one was. I thought at the beginning that it was, you know, a solid trade for Montreal because they got an offensive player that they wanted, you know, obviously for their fans and also for the type of game potentially they wanted to play. But I thought it was a home run for Tampa because you're getting a defenseman under the age of 20 who's played in a World Junior, who's played in a Memorial Cup, who looks like he's already an NHL body. I know the skill development that they do down in Tampa, it's phenomenal. Their research and development programs with their players is phenomenal down in Tampa. So I felt, and I called Al Murray, their chief scout, and I said, man, that was awesome for your team. Like, you guys made out getting a defenseman like that. And they said, well, we needed one. I said, yeah, no, I know. But it was a great pick. And I think eventually it'll be a trade, Robin, that'll work out for both teams. I do. I don't know if it'll work out as well for Montreal as it will for Tampa, because I don't think Drouin will ever be a major trophy award winner. I don't think he'll ever win a Rocket Richard. I don't ever think he'll win a Hart. I don't think he'll win an Art Ross. I do think Sergachev can be a major award winner. I do think he can win a Norris Trophy. So if you quantify it that way, Robin, I think probably Tampa wins the deal.
Pierre, let's say they were going to make the switch and they move Galchenyuk to center and Jonathan Drouin to wing, or a suggestion that I brought up because I like Charles Hudon play yesterday on the fourth line. I said maybe you go Hudon in the middle, you go weak down the middle, but you go with skill on either side. But let's just say they move Drouin out of the center position. What's the conversation between Jonathan Drouin and his coach or his general manager? You got to let this young man know that this was on them, right? You don't want him, a gutshane new, you know, 40 games into his tenure with the Habs, to feel like he has failed or he's let them down.
No, absolutely not. You've made this financial commitment and this contractual commitment to the player because you trusted him originally, and you trusted the eye of the scouts that evaluated him, the general manager that traded for him, and the ownership group that signed him. So, no, there's been obviously a lot of bridges crossed where there's a lot of trust involved. This is not a failure by any stretch. Sometimes it takes some guys longer than other guys to react in a certain way to a trade. I'll give you an example, just to put it in perspective. Look at how well Kyle Turris has reacted to the trade from Ottawa to Nashville. He's really thrived. But look at Ottawa and Matt Duchene and how the team has struggled, and so has the player. Now, Turris, to his credit, had already been traded, if you think about it, from Arizona to Ottawa. This is the first time Duchene's ever been traded. So there's the first time you're traded is never easy. And I think, especially if you've already established yourself in a certain city. So I think that's part of it too, when you're looking at these things. And for Jonathan, it's the first time he's ever been traded.
Pierre, just want to go with some of the bigger notes in the National Hockey League. We spoke about it last week that last year he was the best kept secret in hockey. That is no longer the case. And Mark Scheifele, 6 to 8 weeks,
yeah,
a loss for the Winnipeg Jets. Look, I don't think they're going to thrive without him, but do they not have enough talent up front to survive without him?
They do. This is where a young player like Nick Petan maybe gets a little more of a chance. This is where Nikolai Ehlers has to obviously elevate. Blake Wheeler, who's had a tremendous year, obviously has to continue that. But, yeah, no, they can. It's not going to be easy. I think anybody that listens to this show knows how much I've been talking about Mark Scheifele over the last couple of years. He really is that good. It's obviously a big blow to them. And that's a long amount of time and a key time of the year, especially with NHL players not going to the Olympics this year, where it's going to make it a little bit more difficult for them, no question.
Pierre, I think the NHL got it wrong. The Zach Rinaldo 6-game suspension. I don't get it, Pierre. The NHLPA and the NHL want to convince us that player safety is an incredible issue, and it's something that they want to tackle firsthand. He punched another man in the face, and the other man didn't engage, didn't provoke. The other man just stood there. It's for me, I get it. When you're running a league, it's very difficult to suspend LeBron. It's very difficult to suspend Sid. But this is a guy, Pierre, that you can throw the book at him. You can throw the book at this guy. 6 games to me is an absolute joke, and I don't want to hear, and forget the NHL, keep them out of it. I don't want to hear the NHLPA ever tell me anything about players' safety when they sign up to stuff like this.
Well, my argument's always been, and I remember bringing some of my players in for hearings, and it would be me as a head coach, my player, and on one side of the table, and then it'd be the NHLPA and the offending player on the other side. I'd be like, wait a second. I thought it was about the entire Players Association and the safety of the players, not the guy that was the offender.
Yeah.
And they never had an answer. So, listen, I will tell you this. Zach Rinaldo's had to do a very difficult job for a lot of years, and it is not easy. And, you know, sometimes you just get a little blinky in those situations. I've seen it happen. I think we've all seen it happen. I thought 6 games was probably closer to where the league would come down, but I think a lot of people were hoping it would be 10. I really think a lot, based on the conversations I've had over the last day and a bit, I thought a lot of people were kind of looking at 10, but I kind of see where they came in at 6. I really do. But it's not as easy a job as you think for those guys in player safety. It's a very, very difficult job.
Pierre, always a pleasure, and a happy new year. All the best, and we will talk to you again on Tuesday, right? We are off
Tuesday.
On Monday, so we will talk to you on Tuesday.
Oh, so we don't have a show tomorrow?
We do not.
World Juniors
tomorrow. Canada, USA.
Oh, I didn't know they were playing. I didn't know there was a game.
Outdoor game, Pierre.
I'm joking.
Oh, sorry. My bad. My bad.
All right. Happy New Year. Have a good one.
All the best. Thank you, Pierre. Pierre McGuire, NBC hockey analyst. I'm sorry. I think the NHL dropped the ball on that one. On the Zach Renault, but I don't get it. Like, he wasn't even provoked. Like, he wasn't even in defense mode. He was in I'm going to punch you in the face mode, which is a very bad mode to be on if you're playing hockey or in life for that matter. Just shouldn't go around punching people in the face. But that's just it. Very aggressive music today, Rod. Very, very rockish.
This is the classic McGuire outro music. Has been every day for the last 15 years.
No. Usually I run.
I can tell you listen a lot.
No, I listen every day. You know that, but usually this is when I run down and I get ready for a PTI. Only the clip you play, of course, not the entire show. What do we got? We got Joe Smith from the Tampa Bay Times. Lots to get into with Joe, and we'll break down. I just want to get his perspective of watching Sergachev play for 37, 38 games thus far. And Pierre LeBrun goes at 6:05. Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette, 6:35.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. ShipEnergy.com.
Yo, what's the connection between pucks, tires, beer nuts, jock straps, panties, and avocados?
I don't know.
Nothing. Energy Transportation.